This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hey everybody, it's Aaron Norris with the Norris Group. Thanks for joining us. We've been on break because of I Survive Real Estate. Thank you so much for all those who helped us raise over $70,000. Next year, we are going to hit the million mark. Heads up, September 18th, 2020 is when year 13 will happen and when we will raise $1 million. But this week, we have Neiman Dong Bandon with Gerasi LLP. He is in charge of the real estate finance group there, and he is a partner with the law firm. His practice entails all facets of lending matters across the country. He advises financial institutions on various lending matters, including licensing, usury, and foreclosures, which you just helped me with a couple weeks ago. He is also an expert in default management and leads the firm's non-judicial trustee group. He got his degree from Miami School of Law, and then before that, his undergrad was at UC Irvine, go Anteaters, in political science. So welcome to the show, Nima.
I appreciate that. I have not heard a go Anteaters in a while, so I feel that my day's already started off well.
That's where I got my MBA back in 09. It's been a decade, but I'm a fellow Anteater. It's a very strange animal choice, but what are you going to do?
Yes. So I think it's za-za, right, is the expression, which is even weirder. That's your rallying cry here.
So how did you go from political science into law, and specifically this very interesting niche of law?
Yeah, you know, the earlier part of my life was me stumbling into things. So I feel like I did not live a particularly intentional life. So I graduated from UCI. And my older brother is a district attorney. And so it kind of just seemed like the natural progression of, I guess I should probably go to law school now because I don't think that a career in arguing politics will get me very far. And so I applied to go to law school, and I grew up locally here. So I was grew up in Orange County for my life. And so went to UCI for undergrad and really wanted to kind of try to venture outside of this little 25-mile square niche for a little bit. And so went to University of Miami. And as soon as I got to Miami, I realized I very much wanted to practice law and have my career back here in California. And at the time, I was reaching back out to my brother, and I said, hey, I need a job. Like, I'll work for free. I'll do anything. I need a job back in California. Can you talk to anybody that you know that practices? And he's playing poker with my now partner, Anthony Gerasi, and one of his friends. And so he's actually talking to one of his friends, and he says, hey, you know, my brother's looking for an internship. Are you guys looking? And Anthony just looks at him and says, hey, you know, I'll pay him, but yeah, have him come work for me. And so I'm now a first-year law student, elated at the concept of making any money. I end up working with Anthony my very first summer in law school, and I was hooked. I couldn't believe, I had no idea what private lending was. I always had an interest in real estate and had taken the courses while I was in college, but I never, kind of went down that pathway. So I always had kind of the inclination, and I always really loved finance. And so between, the merger of real estate and finance was awesome. I mean, I just remember vividly that first summer going, this is so interesting, and I want to do this. And so when I graduated law school, I went right back to Anthony and said, hey, I'd love to work back with you and never look back.
Okay. Yeah. When I started with the company in 05, it was right before the downturn, and we were, working on a report called the California Crash, and we were warning all of our investors, it's time to get out of Dodge. We started winding down the number of loans that we were doing, being very careful. And the industry has just changed so much. And of course, Dodd-Frank came out several years later after the downturn. And so our industry, the fact that you cover private money, the private money space nationwide, would seem to be very daunting because every state is very different. Here in California, we're regulated under the rules of the Department of Real Estate. We have our California financial lender's license. We just don't regulate ourselves here under that. But in Florida, we are regulated under the MLO with the state of Florida. And you and I talked a couple weeks ago because we were actually over-regulating ourselves. But we did that on purpose initially because we thought that that there was some legislation going through in the state of Florida. It didn't matter what kind of loan you were doing, whether it be business purpose, like a real estate investment loan or a consumer loan, that you were going to have the same kind of regulation do both. So you and I got to chat, and in 15 minutes, you saved me a lot of money every year. But how do you possibly stay on top of all this stuff nationwide, since state to state is so different?
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting. To a great degree, the law firms always revolved around following our clients and where they're going to take us. And so when I first started practicing, we were primarily representing people such as yourselves who were just solely, you know, California real estate brokers and California finance lenders who were making loans only here in California. You know, and that was great, especially from 2010 to 2013. You know, you could, the market was just on fire. There wasn't a lot of competition. And the people that we were representing were doing extremely well and could make a ton of money in the business. What ended up happening is, you know, yields started to really compress here in California. A lot of capital started chasing deals, here in California. And so those same clients were trying to continue to return high returns for their investors, and they didn't want to increase their risk. And so they really started looking outside of the state of California as a reprieve. And they also thought from a diversification perspective. I remember one of our clients said, look, you know, if the big one comes, I don't want half my portfolio, you know, worth nothing. And so so we started talking about, you know, both diversification from potential risks, but also an opportunity to continue to earn higher yields, because we were not seeing yield compression occur outside of California at the time. So our clients basically started saying, look, we'd like to continue to work with you. You know, how do we do this? How do you kind of be our lead attorney, knowing that you're here in California, but and we want to make a loan in Texas? And so that really started our nationwide practice. And what we ended up doing was retaining law firms all throughout the country. So, you know, as of right now, we have 40 law firms that we have on retainer. And we started kind of just building a nationwide Rolodex. And it was just state by state. So we were in Texas, and we would ask the same questions every single state. And I'd walk into a new transaction, and we'd say, you know, Texas counsel, do I need to be licensed to make a loan in your state? Do I need to be licensed to broker a loan in your state? You know, tell me about how foreclosure works in your lending market. What's the, you know, are there specific concerns that I need to be worried about from, for example, are there impermissible late charges, or, you know, kind of give me the lay of the land. And so we just started kind of documenting all of the things that we were learning from our counsel throughout this process. And in addition, we were also having our loan documents reviewed by those law firms. And so that's just slowly started turning. And sure enough, in 2014, 2015, particularly with the Jobs Act, and so that which had probably the biggest impact on our industry, was so Jobs Act basically said, if you want to raise investment capital, and the previous requirements was that if you were going to do a private investment fund, you generally could not advertise that mortgage fund or whatever you could do, a syndication or otherwise. However you wanted to raise money prior to the Jobs Act, you were really restricted in advertising. The Jobs Act came around and basically permitted people to raise or to kind of flood the airwaves. You could use Facebook and LinkedIn or, you know, email blasts or however you wanted to advertise, and you could advertise freely. And so that created this huge capitalization throughout the country. And that also started in our industry a concept called crowdfunding, which used to be, I don't know if you've ever done something like the Kickstarter things where you're like, hey, I want to buy a cool cooler, which has got, you know, it's a margarita blender and a,
right? Oh, yeah.
So that's a form of crowdfunding, right? But what you started to see was, well, hey, I actually have a single loan. Could I put 200 investors on a single loan, right? Could I get people to invest as little as $500 into a loan,
mm-hmm.
right? And they started treating these very similar to how you go buy a stock in the stock market. And it completely revolutionized the private lending community, because it made it much more easy to invest, because typically this is an industry of really high net worth individuals. And so, you know, I've got a guy that has got, you know, millions and millions of dollars, and he puts a single loan on a $3 million asset. And that was our client, right? That's kind of how it worked before then. And instead you started seeing companies that were going to be the source of deal flow. And they were looking at that deal flow, and they're saying, all right, well, I can actually place a ton of investors in this single loan transaction. And these guys were passionate about building a scalable nationwide model. And so we started working with a bunch of crowdfunding crowdfunding clients, and they all wanted to go nationwide. And so it was just basically us kind of following the market. And we've always kind of, you know, Anthony, my partner, always tells me, you know, our job is to see a need and to fill that need, right? So whatever our clients are kind of looking into, and where they want to go is let's figure out how to build that bridge for them. And that's really kind of how the nationwide practice started. And it's just grown from there. I mean, so it's what used to be, you know, this one-off kind of basis is oddly enough, as a law firm that's just here in Orange County, California, we probably have more out-of-state transactions than we have in-state transactions now.
Well, a lot of people want to leave the state of California. You know, half the people I talk to, it's because they're worried about a recession, and the other half is just politics. They're like, later. They want to keep their
politics. No, I have never heard it more than you're saying now. I mean, that's really the refrain we're hearing from both sides. I mean, right, and especially, you know, with California's continued push on the rent control side, I mean, they're making it really difficult to make the real estate model pencil out. And we're, you know, whether we'll see where the economics pencil out on this issue, but to a great degree, as I think you, to your point, is people are really saying, well, California doesn't look, even though the real estate prices seem to do very well out here, it doesn't seem to be a marketplace that we can trust and be able to navigate in the long term.
I don't know how individuals trying to raise money in the space right now do so if they don't have great legal counsel or aren't very tied to your local mortgage association. So we belong to the California Mortgage Association for a long time, and I make sure I attend at least one time a year. And then you and I are both members of the American Association of Private Lenders, and Gracia is you guys are part owner of Apple, correct?
Right. So Anthony formed the organization back in 2009 with other partners. And we've always remained their general counsel since then.
Yeah, and you guys do a great job on the government affairs side, and it's necessary. I went back with Think Realty earlier this year to DC, you know, talking to specific congressional members and committees that we're in the real estate space or thinking about legislation around real estate, and I really appreciate how Think Realty, Apple, and you guys have approached it from a very data-driven perspective. Because I think a lot of the times they're just struggling to figure out how to deal with the affordable housing issue, but they're not thinking long-term about the impact across the board. So one of the things that you did is you went to the state of Florida. One of the reasons that we were over-regulating ourselves is because we really thought that we were going to be regulated the same way a consumer lender would. So that meant for us at the full time, we were doing a full-blown financial audit every year. It's exhaustive. It's not just what's that $2.15, it's what's the process and procedures around that. So it took, you know, several of our team offline for an extended period of time. It's very intense. But you were one of the people that went down to Florida and basically fought against it, saying, you guys don't understand, you're about to shut down an entire industry if you do this to this group of business lenders. So you want to talk a little bit about that process, how you even found out about it, and how you were ultimately one of the people that helped decide to get that squashed?
Yeah, you know, piggybacking on what we talked about earlier, is one of the things we were compiling in the background was a research library about mortgage licensing laws throughout the country. It's oftentimes surprising for people in California. As you know, California is a very regulated marketplace. So people are typically surprised to hear that the vast majority of the country does not regulate business purpose lending. So if you're going to be fix and flipping a property, if you're going to be purchasing a rental property, the financing side of that is generally unregulated throughout most of the country. And so we're kind of building out this matrix over time. And one of the things we were doing is you have to keep this updated because laws are constantly changing in each state. So each year we would typically over the summer refresh our research. And it was always a very reactionary approach to this problem, saying, look, you know, for example, a few years ago, we saw that Utah changed their laws such that you are now required to have a license to make a investment loan in the state of Utah. And we just reported that back out to our clients and as a client service. And at one point, we was actually after we had met so AAPL went and met with legislators in D.C., and we realized firsthand that the legislative bodies simply do not really understand or know that this private lending space exists, and they don't realize what legislative effects they have on the private lending space. And so from that meeting, we kind of sat and said, you know, instead of being reactionary and just, you know, running annual surveys and just reporting them back out, why don't we actually start tracking these things so that when a legislative body is attempting to change these laws, we can actually go in and try to have a conversation with the legislative body so they can understand the impact of the change. Mm-hmm. And so this happened, and this is a real first test of it, was in March of this year in the state of Florida. You know, sure enough, I'm at my computer and getting these kind of weekly updates from the different legislative bodies and see that the state of Florida is amending their definitions for who is required to have a license to make a mortgage loan. And so we get these pings and we start going in there. And so we start connecting with AAPL and saying, hey, look, we can be very proactive. This has just hit the legislative floor. They have a very short legislative session in Florida. I think it's about 60 days in total. So if we're going to make an impact, let's go and let's go now. And so we started this campaign drive to try to get just really an informational campaign out to the legislative body out there. So it was a Senate bill, and we try to connect directly with the Senate bill sponsor out there and say, hey, by the way, we're private lenders. I don't know if you're aware, but this affects our marketplace. If you pass this legislation, we are private lenders, and we try to approach it from a data perspective. We had a bunch of mortgage lenders who are not currently licensed in the state of Florida, both people inside the state as well as people outside of the state. And we say, I made, you know, X number of loans last year. The aggregate loan amount is X dollars. And should you pass this licensing registration, I will go to the other states which don't require a license to make a loan. And in fact, there's 40 other states that I could go to. So I'll simply cross the border over Georgia because it doesn't make sense for me to obtain a license in your state. So we kind of started this campaign with them. And we started realizing that this was actually the senator that proposed this was actually effectively doing kind of a special interest benefit for a particular person in Florida who actually really wanted this to pass. And so it became this was not an education campaign anymore. We actually had to go in and really try to attempt to convince the remainder of the legislative body that this was actually bad legislation. So I was able to fly down there a few different times and speak to the Senate there. And it was really interesting. We brought a whole group of people with us. We brought private lenders who were in the state of Florida because we wanted to make sure that we had constituents speaking there. But what was also great is we brought kind of on the Think Realty side of what you're talking about, we started communicating with the local RIA groups out there saying, hey, look, if this passes, there's just going to be a lot less private lenders in your marketplace. Mm-hmm. And so they were, you know, they wanted access to capital as well. And so as they started showing up, we also, the Florida Association of Mortgage Professionals started showing up. And so we started getting this conglomeration effect where we really kind of had a blanket. And I remember, you know, not only would we go speak in front of the Senate committee rooms, but we were going, you know, I kid you not, door by door throughout the Senate halls for everyone. And it was very interesting because they would say, hey, I'm not the person you should talk to because this is about to hit another committee next week. Go talk to this senator and see what he thinks about this issue. And so we're kind of getting bounced around throughout the Senate and Assembly there. And really, it was partly informative. Let's educate them about the impact of this. And the biggest arsenal that we had was you're so far out of the marketplace if you do this. There's 40 other states. And in particular, we started talking about the East Coast states because it made it relevant for them, saying, look, if you pass this, you're more restrictive than New York. You're more restrictive than Connecticut. You're more restrictive than Massachusetts. Right? These are all states that I suspect, you know, knowing that we've got a Republican legislative body there in Florida, I suspect you're not looking to become more regulated than any of these environments. And so that was really what we started pushing in on. And thankfully, you know, like I said, a huge effort went into play. And it was a win there. But to your point, Aaron, that you said earlier is one of the arguments we posited, which was, I think, hopefully the most compelling one, which was it's, you know, because generally speaking, they would say, well, what's the problem with getting a license? Why do you care about, you know, a license is not a big deal. Shouldn't everyone have a license? You know, we have license for even nominal things. Why wouldn't you want a license? And we weren't necessarily even opposing the aspect of becoming licensed. The biggest aspect was it's a pain to get a license in the state of Florida because it's very expensive and it's a huge amount of oversight. And so one of the requirements that you already hit on is you need audited financials, and the senators had no idea how much this cost.
Yeah.
And so we're like, look, we get audited, there are 40,000, you go to most accounting firms, and it's $40,000 every year. It doesn't matter how many loans you do.
Correct. Right? That's so, the big thing. If you're not busy doing massive volume, it's not going to financially make sense for you to be in it at all. So yes, it would effectively shut down a lot of smaller private lenders.
Correct.
And it would have been across the board. It wouldn't have mattered if you were doing one or two, right? It would have just been a blanket. You're getting a license. And this is how what that looks like.
That's exactly right.
And that's what's frustrating, right, that every state is so different. And I definitely want to make time because you brought up something really important. I mean, we're so used to being in California and, you know, Dodd-Frank came out and they're like, that's not enough. So, you know, Senate Bill, I think it's 578 in 2013, overlaid a bunch of different stuff on top of it. And we've had a series of updates. So it's an extremely regulated environment. So let's start here in California. Like, you know, this is the natural progression. I'm a real estate investor. I don't want to use, I love doing hard money loans, but I know at some point people outgrow us and they think they want to start raising capital on their own, which is a business altogether. At what point does California require you to have a license?
So California is really interesting. It's probably the second most regulated state. Oddly enough, Nevada tends to be even more regulated than we are. But California effectively is, you cannot make a loan at all in the state of California, whether it's for consumer or business purposes, without some form of license. So, and the way this manifests is if you read the definition of what we call a California finance lender, the definition basically says is a finance lender is a person who makes a loan in the state of California, right? And one of the exceptions, so there's a single exception to that rule, which says if you can make one business purpose loan per year without being licensed, so there's a one-off exception. There's a second exception, which is how real estate brokers operate in the state of California, which is any loan which is arranged by a licensed real estate broker is exempt from the California finance lender's law. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, you know, you're either a California finance lender or you're a real estate broker, or the loans are coming arranged through licensed real estate brokers. So in fact, is you really couldn't do this on your own. And a lot of people are unaware of this. And the penalties are fairly severe in this situation. So you've got, you know, regulatory issues, obviously, that the state regulators come after you. You've got another concern, which is what we call usury. So in California, if you make one of these unlicensed loans, right, a loan either that wasn't made through a California finance lender or arranged by a real estate broker, the maximum rate of interest, and this is from an APR perspective, is 10%. As you're probably aware, most private lending deals exceed a 10% APR. Mm-hmm. And when you have a usurious loan, the penalty is zero interest, right, is the baseline. But it could also be, if it's a knowing violation, three times the amount of interest that was ever paid or earned during the life of that loan. So you could actually lose principal in a deal as well. There was a really interesting case. And California is crazy because this is the state where that's probably got the most issues, where the original transaction of a loan was arranged by a licensed real estate broker. No usury problem, right? There's an exemption there. But that investor started extending, modifying, changing the character of this loan over a series of years. Those changes were never done through a real estate broker.
Ooh.
Right. So that exemption he initially held was gone.
Oh, geez.
So we're now 10, 15 years down the line. Right. He goes to enforce this. Right. Borrower stops paying, tries to foreclose. Court unwinds all these records. And what ends up happening is not only does the lender not get any of its principal back, they end up stroking a check back to the borrower because they've been collecting interest payments for 12 years. And so they actually end up owing more than anything that was ever due to them. So that's how crazy California can be from a regulatory perspective, particularly when it comes to using or to not using licensed professionals, either to make the loans, arrange loans, or even modify, extend, all these sorts of things. I think people oftentimes fail to take into consideration that you know, California wants professionals involved when it comes to the lending business. It's just the state of our marketplace.
Yeah, and you know, everything's been going well in the market. It's during a downturn that things get really mucky, and you know, the digital tools are as such as they will hunt and find you, and it's just not fun to get caught. And then things go sour. The parties involved, if anybody starts complaining and get attorneys involved, that's when you just need to be doing stuff in the right way. It's just all I can say. So
agreed.
I always tell people, if you're planning on raising any kind of money, you better be talking to an attorney that knows what they're talking about. I got told last year by an attorney in Florida, like, well, you know more about this stuff than I do. I'm like, and that's the problem. I was like, so can't use you.
We agree on this point.
Yeah. We talked recently with a crowdfunding attorney on this. You know, if you're going to leverage anything in the Jobs Act, you just really need to look at the activity you're doing, how you're raising money. I think there's a false sense of security because some of these platforms that are offering sort of the Reg D offering, just be really careful. I don't get the sense that a lot of these platforms are in the business of offering good, solid legal advice because they just want to be a platform. They're not vetting the deals. So there's a sense of security from if I'm looking to lend money, I'm like, hey, I could put $50 in this and make a return. And then also the investor leveraging those platforms. So just be very careful in the years ahead, especially if we hit a recession. That's when things typically get a little wonky and difficult to get out of, and people looking for money, especially since a lot of these things are happening in self-directed IRAs.
Sorry to jump in. I'll piggyback on that. One of the things that is really interesting, in particular with the proliferation of online crowdfunding platforms, is that when you actually read through and understand is there is no security involved in this transaction.
Correct.
Right. What the crowdfunding platform is offering you is an unsecured note.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And there's a derivative sitting behind it saying, look, based on the performance of this underlying thing, we will pay you money. Right. But at the end of the day is if they don't pay you, you don't get to get the underlying loan. There is no security for your loan, which is crazy from a real estate perspective. It takes the entire premise of real estate investing on the lender side completely out of whack. I mean, that was the whole, our business was built upon having great security sitting behind the loan, and they just strip that out. And I think that people really fail to realize that there's most crowdfunding platforms in the real estate space simply have no security behind them.
And it's very scary when you read further the fine print and you find out that there's language like, oh yes, and if there's a default that occurs, we may not exist anymore. So the platform itself isn't saying that they're going to help you get your money back either. So right. Yeah, if they're not making any money, you might have one person answering phones. That's it. So you're in bed with a bunch of people you don't know, trying to get your money back. That actually happened to me when I first started the business. We were part of the California Mortgage Association. I was trying to hunt down some contacts, and you would call private lenders that were very aggressive right before the downturn. And it was just a voice message saying, you know, we're closed, leave a message, we'll try to get back to you. We just get really spoiled when in a good market, not thinking that it can go the other way, and some of the ramifications that come with it. So just be very careful whether you're on the lending side or, you know, you're a real estate investor looking to raise money and do these kind of things. You just really have to do it right. And you better be working with legal counsel that understands the state laws because it changes drastically. We're running out of time. And one of the things I really wanted to bring up, and I'm going to be promoting it this week, and everyone's going to be like, why do you care? It's in New York, but it's really important. At the conference in Las Vegas for AAPL last week, we have sort of gotten behind this. This New York has this great idea of charging flippers 25% tax if a property is bought and sold within a year. Is it 20%?
Yeah, in the first year, 20%, and 15% if sold in the second year.
Is this a tax on the net proceeds from a flip?
No, this is on gross sales price.
Oh, my God. Really? Oh, that makes it even worse.
Gross sales price.
So effectively, if you're selling anything within a year, and this is interesting because this would completely damage iBuyers if this goes through, and why we all sort of have to care about this is that it's already, I think the state of Georgia is already sort of looking to New York saying, hey, this is a great way to stop. It's specifically an affordable housing play and a gentrification play. Those are sort of the two key terms that are getting thrown around a lot. And you just have to know it exists. And just because you don't live in the state doesn't mean that you can't sign the petition. Do you happen to know the link that people can go and sort of voice their concern that AAPL put together?
Yeah, so AAPL is a website, and it's AAPL online. I believe it's .com.
Yes, it is.
But don't go. It's AAPLonline.com. And that is, it should be right there on the main page where you can sign petitions or otherwise. But yeah, no, I'm actually, after I get done with this, going to record a little video on New York. And to your point, Aaron, is I know a lot of people say, well, I'm not, you know, who cares what they do in New York? This one has scary legs to it. I think that to the degree that, New York passes this, you will start seeing this in a lot of other states, because they are very interested in, A, additional revenue sources, but B, stopping the dramatic increase, particularly of low-valued units. And so I see this as being a pretty strong response nationwide. So this is definitely something where I think that, people, you know, across the country really have to be careful about.
Yeah, so if you go to aaplonline.com and there's an engagement section, and you can sign up for under the engagement tab, there's a government relations, and you'll find out more about it's a Senate, New York State Senate Bill S3060E. And I highly recommend, please sign the petition that's on their website. You can put a little information on there on how you think it would impact. But I think about all the trades, construction, especially since it's 20% of the gross. I mean, that would effectively squash fix and flip for the foreseeable future. I mean, I know the...
You would eliminate it.
Here in California, our investors are not working off of it. The margins are so tight right now. This just seems incredibly impossible.
Right.
So I will definitely put links to that in the show notes as well. Nima, we are out of time, but how can people find out more about you?
Sure. So, you know, we've got our website, which is GerossiLLP.com or GerossiLawFirm.com. Either will work. But yeah, no, definitely appreciate the time, Aaron, and good luck out there. I really appreciate what you do for everybody.
Well, and thank you for doing some extra legwork on the legislative slide. I know nobody's always paying you to do that, but it is greatly appreciated.
No, same here, bud. Appreciate it.
The Norris Group originates and services loans in California and Florida under California DRE License 01219911, Florida Mortgage Lender License 1577, and NMLS License 1623669. For more information on hard money lending, go to thenorrisgroup.com and click the Hard Money tab.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.